Welcome to another ornithological episode of the Atomic Powered Supercast with your hosts Andrew, David, and Jim. This week our topic is Birds of Prey by Gail Simone. And now the cast begins.
Okay, everybody, welcome to issue number 95 of the Atomic Powered Supercast. I just called it an issue.
Yeah, right? I was going to say, do we call them issues now? See, I mean, I guess it's appropriate since we're a comic book podcast.
It is. See, I decided, you know what, the other day I was like, well, the intro voice guy does an adjective and I do an adjective and they don't match up and it's kind of weird. And then I realized we've done 94 fucking episodes. Like, I'm proud of that. I want to start saying the number in the intro. Is that okay? Can I start doing
that's
that?
That's
good. Yeah. I mean, we've been...
We have enough that it's not...
We're heavy. Coming up on... getting close okay. to 2 years now.
See, and now it's like a countdown, too. Okay. So, my name's Andrew, or Andy, and I'm hanging out with David.
Hey.
And Jen.
Yo.
And this week, we read Birds of Prey, Of Like Minds by Gail Simone, wrapping up our Gail Simone series of episodes. This was art by Ed Benes and Alex Lay. Lei is how you spell his last name.
I think
name.
That's usually Lei.
Liz Lei? Think.
Is it Hawaiian?
I don't think it's Hawaiian. Well, maybe. Who knows?
I don't know. When you say Lei like that, I think of Hawaii.
Well, yeah, because that's how Lei is spelled.
Yeah. Even in Leia. Okay, anyway. So, yeah, this week we read Birds of Prey, which I'm actually super excited about because I actually, a couple months ago, started reading Birds of Prey from, like, issue one. And I really, really like this comic because, as far as I know, this run is split up pretty evenly, more or less, among two writers. Like, Chuck Dixon did the first 45 issues, and then there was a span of about a year, and then, to my understanding, Gail Simone does, like, another 50 starting here. So, like, this book is crazy continuity. It's awesome. So, if we have any bird-related questions, maybe I can
I'll probably
answer some
have
of them.
Some for yeah.
So, did you guys like this, David?
Yeah, I liked it.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't know. I feel like this is a comic, in my mind, this is a comic that Gail Simone is best known for. Mm-hmm. This is a lot of hype. It's like watching
came into with expectations?
Yeah. And I'm not saying my expectations were not met. It was a very good comic.
All right. What about you, Jen?
I liked it a lot. I really like Barbara Gordon. So I almost feel like my view is, like, skewed here, and I really like Gail Simone's Barbara Gordon. I think she does really well with that character every time she touches it. Had a tendency to dislike Black Canary in the past, and I found her rather interesting and likable and, like, a whole person in this, and that was really enjoyable. Like, in your notes, one of you mentions that there's, like, talking heads
yes.
throughout this whole thing, and that kind of threw me off, but the dialogue between them was so interesting that I think it made up for it a lot.
Well, I didn't say it as a bad thing in the notes. I just noticed that, like, I know Gail Simone's strength is personality, right? I mean, we've read three issues, now we're on the fourth, and when you read her work, you get a really, really good sense of character, way better than a lot of other writers. And so I think it's really interesting how in this comic, yeah, the first one has a lot of action, but for more or less the most of the story, it's a lot of character interaction. And it's really mm-hmm. suspenseful because it's a hostage situation. So she keeps that feeling of action present all the time, but she writes a story that really plays to her strengths, too. And I think it was a really intelligent choice to make a comic structured this way, you know, because if you go in and you know your strength is writing good characters,
yeah,
make a situation
sense.
Like that.
I mean, I think it was the discussion between Barbara and Dinah that just kind of fueled the whole thing and got it going. Not even the fight against Savant or, you know, this underlying idea about is it just to do what they're doing, but kind of just that friendship. And it was really fun to read.
And even the fight was, like, it wasn't suspenseful fighting because, and I like that it was done this way, you get two martial artists going at it. You get Savant and Black Canary. And Black Canary is a world-class martial artist, and she knows instantly she's outclassed. So, like, from there, it's just, I'm going to hang on and hope to get the hell away. Mm-hmm. I really like that about the fight because then she already knows. She knows, in that first instance, she knows she's outclassed.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that we usually get in pretty much in all hero comics is, there's a bit of, you get the notion that the hero kind of always is outclassed in some
yeah.
aspect,
mm-hmm.
but it's all about overcoming that adversity. And here, instead of having, I mean, Black Canary overcomes her situation, but she doesn't overcome fighting Savant necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
They accept help from the outside. You know, Huntress comes in.
I'm just so awesome. I love Huntress.
Yeah. So it's kind of a different take. I mean, and this is not like, I mean, the situation is dire in that our protagonist is in a life-threatening situation, right?
Yeah.
But a lot of times it's not some earth-shattering event,
yeah.
You know? But you get the same level of, there's the same level of tension here because you spend so much time getting to know these two characters, Barbara and Dinah, in like the first, just in the first issue, the whole interaction,
mm-hmm.
them discussing what it means to be, you know, do what they do and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So
yeah, and you get that
different.
You get that nice quiet inside moment where Dinah walks back in with the contact lenses still in and freaks Barbara the hell out.
Yeah,
like that was awesome because so many times, like you say, in most comics, you get these earth-shattering things. You see them going out being badass. You see them overcoming that adversity, and then it's just like 3 months later.
Yeah, you don't get much opportunity to see the characters as not be superheroes, just be regular people, unless it contributes to the storyline. And obviously, it contributes to the story here, but it's the story is these characters' interaction. It's not the things that happen outside of being a superhero that carry them from one major crossover super event to the next, you know?
So, do we like the villains in this one? I know last week we kind of bashed on the villains a little bit.
I really like
Savant.
Yeah. Like Savant and Creo?
Yeah, they're very interesting. They're just like we see with Barbara and Dinah, there's an interesting
like
friendship going on here.
Friendship?
I actually really like that because, you know, it's really easy to... Well, we don't know if that feeling is reciprocated, but Creo has definite feelings for Savant, and
yeah.
Dinah picks up on this. It's common to make a really big deal of that sort of thing and be like, oh, look, we're being equal, or we're being special, or blah, blah,
yeah.
blah. And that's fine. It's good to point out things like that sometimes, but it's even better when you just have people having a human interaction, and it's like not out of place or, you know, not out of the ordinary, and it's just like Creo is in love with Savant, and I like that. It's just they're there and that's cute.
I know. I like how Creo owns up to it too. Like I don't remember, was it Dinah or Huntress who first
asked? I think
it was
Dinah
who asked, does Savant know that you're in love with him? And Creo like has that moment to pause and he says, no, he does not. And I like how he's nice and open about it, you know.
And what's cool,
yeah.
too, is he's not, like, embarrassed, really, by it. I think he's more caught off guard that they picked up on it. And that's interesting, too. There's no, like, I'm not, like, saying embarrassed. I mean, like, he's...
It's a very real interaction. There's no
yeah,
shame for
exactly.
him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, if you, like, I don't know a single gay person who's ashamed of their sexuality.
Yeah, and
right?
I don't think he is here at all.
Yeah. I don't think he is either, but that's. I think we're pointing it out because this is exactly how this interaction would occur. I mean, if we were in a world where superheroes actually existed,
well,
and they were
it's
crazy.
It's how this
and,
kind of this
know?
Kind of thing would happen amongst reasonable individuals.
Yeah,
you know,
like, hey Tony, does Fred know you love him? Right. I mean, just we don't have to name him Savant and Creo. I mean, this interaction just happens.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's just it's refreshing, I think, and. It gives a lot of purpose to what Creo's doing, because it's like, why is this strange bulky man torturing a woman in a bedroom, right? Like, that's, like, the whole setup is creepy, and they do refer to Dinah's past capture. And, you know, that's disturbing, and it's like, he's not doing it because he likes it or it pleases him. He's doing it because someone he really cares about has asked him to. And that's an interesting situation for a villain to be in. Because, oh man, like, usually villains tend to be kind of mustache twirly in comics. Like,
yes.
Evil for evil's sake. Like, Senator Bob is almost literally mustache
yes,
twirly.
Yes, he is.
Yeah, he's got an impressive stash. But Savant seems to have much deeper reasons, even beyond, like, his mental illness and his, you know, wasted privilege. And that's interesting, and the fact that Creo would come along and be willing to do this for someone, you know, commit these heinous acts, is really, in very few words from the author, it shapes his character.
Yeah, and I think you also get a sense from Creel that even though he's this just big, burly dude, and like you said, he's willing to do these heinous acts, he also, I want to say he has a really big heart.
Mm-hmm.
In that, not only is he willing to do this for his friend, but like, you learn through reading this that Savant has a serious disability with the way that he experiences time. And if you want to love that person, you got to have a lot of patience, and you have to have a lot of tenderness. You really, really do.
What's that cliche? You don't choose who you love. It's like that situation, right? It's like Creot just loves Savant, and that's what it is, and he's happy. I mean, it can't be easy, obviously, because he's constantly reminding him when things happened, and you know he's doing these things that are morally despicable, but.
Yeah.
Can't choose who you love.
Can't choose who you love, and that's. I get the feeling that, like Jen said earlier, Creot doesn't enjoy doing what he's doing. He's just doing it because that's the hand that he was dealt. I guess you could say.
Yeah, it's. I don't know. I think it's one thing to torture a woman because she's a woman, and I mean Gail Simone obviously knows this. She did the whole girl in the refrigerator website. Yeah. Because that's outrageous, the idea that a woman, because she's in a comic book, becomes an object of violence. You know, a way to threaten people around her. Which is, you know, what Savant is doing to Barbara. At the same time, Dinah is completely competent. She's experienced this before, and she has mastered the situation this time. She knows what she's doing, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, she's being very... Despite the situation she's in, she's pretty rational most of the time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which is pretty... It's, you know...
It's amazing. Yeah, and I like how this is sort of a commentary on that women in the refrigerator thing. Because normally it's, you know, the girlfriend of a male superhero or something along those lines. But this time we get their... I mean, I think Barbara wants to set it up as more or less a business partnership, but... Everybody reading this comic, everybody in the comic knows it's more than that. They're clearly friends at this point. They're clearly close friends, and even though she wants to say, "Oh, I'm going to fire you," it's nothing like that. But I like how in this comic that interplay is done with woman and woman instead of man and woman. Like here, it's just jeopardizing friendship, and just it's not a matter of, "Oh, you killed the woman I love." It's a matter of you're putting my friend in mortal fucking danger. You're putting a person in mortal fucking danger. That's just an asshole-ish thing to do. Right, like it's just motivator because it's the right thing. It doesn't have to be the whole
Well, the interesting thing too is usually in situations like this, the person who is I'm doing air quotes here stuck in the refrigerator is usually the physically weak person, and in this situation, it's the other way around because the more in the pairing between Dinah and Barbara, Dinah's obviously the more physically capable person. I'm not trying to put down. People in wheelchairs, right?
Not doing anything about disabilities, but just straight up.
But what happens is the person in the position of power is actually Barbara, because she has with her abilities, she's able to direct events in such a way that she can get her friend out of that situation. I mean, she's the one who calls on Huntress, and she's the master or the. I don't know what I'm trying to say. The person who's directing events. The puppet master, There you go. I didn't want to say puppet master, though. That seems... To me, that has, like, negative connotations.
She is kind of,
but yeah,
right?
She definitely is.
I mean,
she's
a little bit... It's not all positive.
She's a little manipulative about what she does.
Man, I really like the situation she's put in, though, because a lot of the time you see that friend relationship, and it becomes, you know, oh, do anything, don't hurt my friend, whatever. And Barbara is saying, I don't think I can do this. I can't give up Batman's identity, even if it means getting Dinah killed. And, you know, at the last moment, she, like, it hits her, and she cracks a bit. And she's like, wait, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
But then, you know, she understands how important it is that Batman's identity remains a secret. And that, you know, even some things that are very precious to you are worth sacrificing for the greater good. And that plays into that whole idea of liberty, civil liberties, and justice, and how far do we tread on one to accomplish the other. And it's just this really cool interplay between themes and character interaction.
So, I mean, we're talking about the relationships between the characters here, and I just really want to say that, like, it was really refreshing reading this, how there was so much discussion of the interpersonal relationships with these characters, like with Barbara and Dick Grayson, and with, I mean, Creot and Savant, but, like, they just came out and said, like, oh, is it because I slept with him? Like stuff like that. Like, it's so refreshing to not have like the coy moment of like, oh, you know, they're kissing, and then, you know, there's Lacey gently wafting curtains, and then they're there in the morning together, right? Like, I mean, that's more than just implied, but like, so often when you read comic books, especially in DC, I feel it's so much implication about who's with who, who's dating who, who's this, who's that, and it just makes it, when it's coy like that, it makes it feel like a teenager's book or something. There's no realism to that.
I did have a complaint about the Dick Grayson.
Yeah?
And it makes perfect sense that Barbara would be feeling emotionally vulnerable because she just broke up with somebody. And they were engaged, weren't they? I think
most relationship stuff with them isn't covered in this book.
Because I know Dick Grayson was engaged to Starfire, and then, like, that didn't happen. And then I think he got engaged to Barbara Gordon. She dumped him when he went off to follow Batman somewhere. And, that's pretty serious if that was the case. And, of course, she'd be upset. On the other hand, I feel like that wasn't really tied into this idea of she doesn't want to see people around her get hurt. She doesn't like what happened to Dinah. Because it's almost like she sees Dinah being put in the chair. And she's like, I can't let that happen to my friend. It's happened to me. And so you have that really... We have two very interesting personal plots here. But they never seem to resolve with each other. Mm-hmm. You know, because Dinah is like, oh, Barbara is so upset right now and trying to fire me because she broke up with Nightwing. But I didn't necessarily see that entire tie-in. Like, yes, she's hurting, but she's also worried. Is there any, you know, reconciliation between these two feelings? Not really.
Well, I mean, that's the thing, is they're not directly related. But, I mean, I get this from reading the first 50-some-odd issues of this run. That worry that Barbara has about Dinah is, it repeats. Whenever Dinah gets caught or seriously injured, Barbara sits back and questions, is it right for me to do this with somebody that I know I call my friend? Like, yeah, we're partners in this cool crime-fighting business, you know, in air quotes, kind of thing, but really, we're friends, and I'm putting my friend here in serious danger. She had a really contemplative moment like this before, but they sort of worked through it, and Dinah was like, no, seriously, Barbara, I can handle my damn self. If I couldn't, I wouldn't be here.
So,
but I think in this situation, the two outside sources that are impacting her, then impacting Barbara, I mean, on the one hand, Dinah's in a wheelchair, and then on the other hand, Dick Grayson and her broke up, and I think they're not directly related, except through Barbara experiencing both of them at the same time. It's just like this moment where she's emotionally destroyed.
I just feel like it could have been a little
smoother. More tied together.
Yeah. I do have a question, though. Dinah's first capture that they, you know, flash back onto, was that during the time she was working with Barbara, or was that way previous?
I think there was two other times during Birds of Prey that Dinah had been captured because Barbara sent her in somewhere.
Mm.
There's another time that Dinah got captured when Barbara told her not to go in, and she went in anyway. I don't know. There's a couple times.
Okay.
I don't want to say it's a recurring theme, but it's kind of a recurring theme. That they get each other into trouble and out of it repeatedly. Repeatedly? Repeatedly. So, I mean, but I know something that we brought up a couple times is sort of the openness with the characters and the way that they talk more realistically. And on the same note, I really want to say how much I love the commentary about costumes in here. It's great.
Huntress is sassy. I like that.
I know. That's why I can perfectly see Huntress and Black Canary getting along just fine. Huntress and Oracle, maybe not so much, because Black Canary says, you know, she doesn't like to take orders, and Barbara likes to give orders, so I don't know how that's going to work out.
They had a really good banter, too, when I think Huntress is trying to escape the guys, and Dinah is trying to do the Oracle thing, and she's like, I don't know what I'm doing, oh god.
I don't know, computer mint, go.
And I love how she was like, fuck it, and she goes down into the street and just does what she does best.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she knows her strengths, and she's not going to try to be someone else. But they had such a good dialogue going on there, where, you know, they're just kind of, I don't know, it's a verbal sparring match at the same time, like, they're in total panic mode, and they're like, ah!
Yeah. Well, I mean, I brought up the costume thing, because it's something that, as readers and as a general comic book community, gets commented on a lot. You know, there's always so much comments. I mean, luckily, we didn't bring it up last week about whether or not Wonder Woman has fucking pants.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I don't think that shit matters. And we'll talk about that later. I'm sure it will come up again. But, like, for some reason, the comic community is obsessed with costumes and costume design. And in here, we actually get the characters themselves commenting on it. And I like that, rather than just doing it in a way that sort of razzes the people that are going to be reading the comic, Gail, someone actually use it in a way that enhances the characters. Like you said, verbal sparring match, where, was it, Diana says, at least my opponents don't know whether or not I have an innie or an outie. And so Huntress's comeback, I think, was earlier. It was like 700 push-ups a day.
Yeah.
Don't have to say anything else.
I love the, like, bashing on the fishnet. Because they deserve it.
Yeah.
Like, why is she still wearing those? Dear God. And I think Huntress appreciates that. She's like, this is not in any way stealthy. You know, you're going to get noticed, and you look like a hooker.
No, I think your line was, and I wrote it in the notes, been a while since I've seen the sunrise wearing an outfit this trampy. And I kind of liked it, because it implies that she wears those trampy outfits and has a lot of fun. Just not until sun.
Well, I mean, her outfit's a little trampy, too.
A little bit as well.
But, you know, she doesn't go out in the day.
Yeah.
She prowls at night.
Well, it's just cool to see self-awareness like that.
Yeah.
Some superheroes have ridiculous costumes. And what's great is these people realize that they look slightly ridiculous, but they're just badass enough to pull it off.
Yeah. It doesn't matter for them.
Yeah.
Oh, did we want to talk a little more in-depth about Savant? Because I think most of what we said was about his relationship with Creo.
Yeah, Creo.
The part where he's getting beaten in prison, did you guys find that really interesting?
Yeah.
Where he is just like, this is what it must feel like to be in this position. Oh, this is what it's like to have to break your thumb. That hurt a lot.
Yeah, I think he's one of those people who, I don't think the stuff about being privileged was thrown in there for nothing. I think he's always been in the upper position. I mean, he's thrown it away most of the time because he doesn't appreciate it. And I think this experience of him being in prison, he's learning to appreciate the sort of life and abilities that he has. He's learning to appreciate, oh, I'd never had to break my thumbs before. This is actually really painful. Now I kind of understand why this Black Canary woman was so angry at me. Because I don't think he had that sense of empathy. I think he's been sociopathic in that way.
Well,
I mean,
what was really interesting, too, is, you know, he threatens Barbara. He's like, I'm going to kill Dinah. And she's like, wait, no, I'll tell you. That prison guard is like, we know where your friend Creo is. We can do things to him. And, you know, he's like, fine, I'll tell you everything I know. And he just, it's not even a question.
Yeah.
Which, like, even if those feelings aren't reciprocated, it makes him really more into a person and not just evil. And what was really interesting, though, is even after all this contemplation and, you know, defense of his friend, realization of what it's like to be in a vulnerable position, he's still like, I'm gonna get that bitch. Like, he's clearly psychotic.
Yeah, he didn't learn much from that situation. Well, I think he had, like, a flash of empathy, but it didn't change his ways at all.
Yeah, that was, I can see that with a character like him, though. It makes sense that he would be like, so this is what it's like. And then he files it in, like, his mental records. And then he's like, on with my life.
That's a great way to put it. Because he kept such great physical records, storing all this stuff. I'm sure that's how his brain is organized, too. Just like a filing cabinet.
It's, I don't know. It makes you feel for him, I think. Mm-hmm. Just messed up. But he's a person.
Yeah. So, okay, speaking about those files, what do we think of the whole thing with Black Canary burning them and Barbara keeping a backup?
I think that they both did the wrong thing. I think they should have handed them over to Barbara's father. I mean, actually, I don't think he could have done anything with that because he had a warrant to get information.
Yeah.
But I don't know, does it legally work if you say an anonymous source gave us this info, so we're doing an investigation? Maybe.
I don't know. I know for a long time in the DC universe, like, people with JLA or JSA cards, any stuff that they obtained while on the job was more or less as having been considered obtained illegally by a police officer. So that's why, like, I don't know if it happens in here, but Black Canary will say, oh, I have a JSA card, or I have JSA clearance. Like, they have that card so they can show it to the police officer, so they're like, look, no, law, this is okay, you can have this from me.
Well then, I mean, obviously Dinah fears that Barbara's gonna be like, go get these guys and, you know, bring them to justice in your crazy vigilante way, but she still has the power to give those files over to the justice system, and you know what, if it doesn't work out because the system's corrupt, that's all you could do, but it's better than just being like, oh, we're treading on people's civil liberties because, you know, you can't, you have to respect people's privacy. I think Barbara's also right in saying can't let them hurt thousands of innocent people. Not if you have a choice.
I don't know. I like the fact that Dinah threw them away while she was asking and didn't wait for the answer. You know, I do kind of like that, but I don't know, at the same time, you're right. Like, that's a lot of really valuable information about people who could have done really bad stuff. I mean, at the end of the day, at the end of the day, I think she threw it away almost out of fear for herself. Because the whole reason they got into this mess was because they tried to blackmail somebody.
Mm-hmm.
The whole reason they got into this mess is because they were trying to be like Savant, but the nice version. And it just, I think she was just had a moment of retrospection when she had the disc in her hand and be like, no, because if I give this to Oracle, she's going to want to do this 80, 50 more times. Fuck this, I'm throwing it in the fire.
It's really interesting how much more vicious Oracle is than Batgirl. Yeah.
She's very calculating.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you're out there doing the physical stuff, there's less room for planning. But, you know, she sits in front of her computers and, you know, can plan contingencies and see how operations are going to go in the future. And so it makes her kind of... She's not just physically removed from the action, but she is mentally removed from it also. You know, she has operatives that go and do her things for her. So it gives... It removes her, not just, like I said, not just physically, but mentally and empathically?
Empathically, I think.
Is that a word?
Emotionally?
Emotionally, yeah.
Yeah.
So I think I kind of got that notion, too. And, you know, you really like Barbara, and you feel that she wants to do the right thing, but there are parts where I was a little creeped out by her.
Yeah, she seems downright cold-blooded at times. And I mean, I would think that having gone through what she did, that would harden her a lot. Because, I mean, if you look at classic Batgirl, it's a very happy-go-lucky crime-fighting character who's kind of the softer side to Batman and Robin. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, I'm gonna help you guys, yay!
And because she didn't do it because of any sense of loss. She just did it because she thought it'd be fun and she'd be good at it. And yeah. She wanted to help.
Whereas here, it's almost... I don't know, not vengeful, but something akin to that emotion.
It feels, to me, reading this, and I might be getting this from the other issues I've read too, but it feels almost compensatory, I want to say.
Hmm.
Not that she's any less of a character in this position as Oracle, but I feel like, to a certain degree, she knows the position that she holds is important. But maybe she doesn't feel like it's as important as she used to be. She's not actually out there helping, in her mind. I mean, she really is helping. She's insanely helpful. Not just for Black Canary, but for all the other superheroes. Her position is vital. But maybe from her perspective, she's like, I don't feel like I'm helping enough. I'm just sitting here in the watchtower, and I've got all this information, but I'm not out there. I'm not doing anything.
Well, it's interesting now that you said that, because remember, think about how Batman became Batman. You know, his parents were killed by criminals, so he's not really... He doesn't say he's out for vengeance, but to a degree it is, right?
Yeah, you know it is.
And so, but before, when Barbara Gordon was Batgirl, she wasn't doing it to atone for anything or to right some wrong, but now she kind of is. Maybe not consciously, but probably at some level she feels even more compelled and more driven to bring justice in her own way. And she is slightly calculating, and like you said, she's cold-blooded, and I think that's... You know, that's why we see her... It's almost like she gets to the edge, and she almost crosses the line into going too far, you know? But she has a support system, like Dinah and Huntress, to kind of keep her from going a little too far.
Yeah. I mean, I think she took those discs, and she kept them, and she's going to file them. She's going to read all the data on them. And I don't think she's going to send Huntress or Black Canary out there to do anything about it. I think she just wants that information in case it becomes useful.
Well, that's exactly what Savant had the information for, right?
And I think he had it more as a failsafe or a safeguard. Like, if you want to try and touch me, I've got so much
but
more
see,
on
but
you.
It was like sitting there in his little
computer lab area
in case he needed it. And now that's what Barbara's doing with it. She's not going to do it in a... She's not going to use it in a malicious way, but it's still information that can hurt people.
Yeah.
Even if they are, like, bad guys.
And I think that's what gives her the confidence to send somebody out there to talk to, Senator Bob.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, would she have sent Huntress out there to talk to Senator Bob if she didn't have that data about him just sitting there?
Certainly, yeah, probably not.
But who knows, yeah.
That's the thing. Like, I can't say whether or not she would. And, I mean, obviously the correct answer, quote-unquote, is fuck no, don't send her out there because all of his men are paid off and he can just fucking shoot her and nobody would ever goddamn know. It's obviously the wrong thing to do. The only reason that you feel safe doing it is because you have leverage on him, which you're right. It's so much akin to Savant. It's creepy.
Savant's working to a very different purpose, though.
I mean, yeah, certainly. Yeah.
Oh, he's not certainly altruistic in any way.
No. I mean, I think that's the only line, though, is the motive.
But see, the thing is, like, even though Barbara's goals are, like you said, altruistic, she's operating outside the law.
Well, so is Batman. I mean, that's kind of the whole Bat family deal.
Yeah, they're all vigilantes in their way, right? But does that make it... They're the protagonists in the story, right? And they're superheroes, so we obviously side with them. But if you kind of step back, if you're like a cop, mm-hmm. you know, like... Or, like, who's a good example? Like, J. Jonah Jameson in Spider-Man, right?
Oh, God.
He hates Spider-Man, even though he knows Spider-Man does heroic things, because Spider-Man is a vigilante who's operating outside the law. And Barbara and Black Canary and Huntress and all of them are definitely those things. And it's good that they exist in the DC Universe, because there's people out there like Savant and, you know, Lex Luthor who are so far removed from the normal criminal element that you need... law enforcement individuals that are outside the normal operating procedures as well. Does that make them good? I guess it does, because they're stopping the bad guys, but from a certain point of view, it's not morally correct all the time.
I guess the question comes down to how much do you weigh intent versus deed? Mm-hmm. So,
and I think with superheroes, we weigh the end very heavily.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting in the DC Universe, there's never been a thing with any of the characters like what happened with Spider-Man, where for so long he was considered public enemy. He was considered a bad guy. I mean, the worst one in the DC is Batman, and people, you know, think he's a little crazy, and the police don't like him, because, you know, they're sort of like, no, that's our fucking job. Get the hell out and do your own fucking job, whatever the hell it is you do when you're not wearing a mask, you crazy weirdo. But at the end of the day, most of the people are saying, he's a little crazy, I don't know what the fuck kind of person does that kind of stupid-ass shit, but... Hey, he's helping. Whatevs.
Well, see, that's...
I mean, at the end of the day, their opinion is, eh, I guess it's not so bad.
I don't want to go too far outside of what we're talking... out of Birds of Prey, but I'm going to do it anyway, right?
That is the only tangent we've ever gone on.
That's what the whole Marvel Civil War event was about, right? Like, have you guys read Civil War? Do you know how it sparked it?
So
the superhero team, the New Warriors, are trying to stop this bad guy named Nitro, and his power is basically to make an explosion. And as they're trying to apprehend him, he explodes, and he explodes next to an elementary school. And he ends up killing like 600 people in this suburban area. And it's like, well, superheroes were trying to do superheroic things, and this guy defended himself using his powers. And so the means did not justify the ends in this case. And it doesn't come up often in comics, mm-hmm. because there's a lot of collateral damage that happened.
Yeah.
You know, in the new...
I mean, my God, if you read Superman, it's nothing but collateral damage, throwing motherfuckers through buildings and stuff.
I mean, we don't get it so much in characters like in like Birds of Prey, because the power set that Dinah and Huntress...
I mean, the worst you get is the Canary Cry, which presses like a car.
But you don't get... The means don't often come up in comics. So, yeah. I just went down a super long tangent and lost where I was going with that.
It's okay.
But you see what I mean? Like, is Barbara's means okay because in the end the good things happen?
Yeah, because her means aren't... There's no collateral damage to her means. The only people that are going to get the collateral damage are the people who are on this list of blackmail, right? Who are... I mean, they're on that list because they did something bad, right? They're not on that list because they're just, you know, going out getting ice cream. So, I mean, you don't question the... I mean, take the Superman example. You don't question the collateral when he punches a guy through, like, you know, an Injustice Society building. But you question the collateral when he goes through, like, an office building, you know? So here, you don't question the collateral when it's bad motherfuckers anyway. It's not like they're getting blackmail on Bruce Wayne.
The thing is, everybody does bad things. So, like, how far do you want to dig in every person's life? Because these aren't, like, supervillains. They're just rich people. And I mean, like, their wealth, power, and privilege enables them to do worse things than, you know, the average Joe, because they have the resources and they're in a position to do so. You know, being like, oh, I'm gonna just take all of my employees' retirement funds and put them in an offshore account, whatever. But the thing is, like, people do bad things, so how far are you gonna go? Because they're not meta-human.
Mm-hmm.
So does that mean... Like, I guess the worry is, are you just going to start interfering with the lives of everybody? And I mean, I don't think they are.
See, but that's the other question, too, that comes up. Is this isn't Oracle's list. This is Savant's.
Mm-hmm.
And Savant wanted Batman's identity. Which means that if he'd been listening when Barbara was willing to give it up, Batman and Bruce Wayne would be on this list.
That's true.
And that's not... He's not doing anything bad. So, I mean, we don't know all of what's on this list. We assume it's guys like Senator Bob and what's-his-face that, you know, happened in the first issue. that they scared the shit out of in that car.
Yeah, but see, was that guy really bad in the same way that, like...
I think he did bad things, but I don't think he's morally evil.
Well, his family was locked in a wine cellar.
Yeah.
Like, it seemed that he was only doing this for his family. Because he did go in, he had his little fit of bravery, and he went back to save Huntress and Black Canary.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, these people whose retirement funds are being funneled off to pay off a bad guy, their lives aren't 100% ruined, you know? But this guy's family could die.
Yeah.
And so, are we in the right to, like...
Judge?
I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, because it's Savant's list. Who knows how actually bad any of these people are? And so that's when you really have to do question, all right, Oracle, this is the information you're taking stock? Really? it's such an interesting character dynamic.
I don't know, but I think that's why... Well, that's why I like it. It's complex, and there's no easy answer.
Mm-hmm.
Which is also why I hate Superman, for instance. Superman is good. Lex Luthor is evil. Like, whatever. This is way more... To me, this is way more interesting, because nobody's quite, like, horribly evil. Nobody's quite terribly
good. Absolute good.
And that's very... That's why I like the whole Bat family. They're questionable individuals.
Well, I mean, you even get people like Huntress, who's, like, coming in and fighting and saving the day, but she also says, in case you guys didn't know, I'm the bad one. And she's, like, willing to break people's legs. She'll crush stuff. So let's talk about the art a little bit. What did you guys think?
I like the style. I felt like it wasn't as dynamic as most comics we read.
You know, I agree with that, but I think it's okay. Because this comic wasn't about dynamism and crazy movements and stuff. And I think the places where Huntress or Dinah had to do a cool jump kick, it was sufficient.
Huntress makes a fucking awesome entrance when she rescues Dinah. She, like, rides her motorcycle straight into, like, someone's kitchen window or something, right? And, like, hits him in the...
She hits Creo
in the head with, like, her wheel. And it's like, oh my god, I love that.
That was pretty awesome.
But, I mean... It makes sense. This is what we're doing. We're sitting around and we're talking. It's not like we're doing some fucking kung fu back here while we're having this discussion.
Yeah.
And that's what you see in comics. Like, every time Batman and Robin talk, they're, like, sparring and talking. It's like, down.
There's so much action on the... Just sit down and talk.
Have a cup of coffee.
Yeah, like, that sort of dynamic art style is great in an action comic, but when you have just Dinah and Barbara sitting in the watchtower talking about, you know, their emotional problems with the mission, like, you don't need action lines and shit. You don't need, like, dynamic, super awesome lighting and coloring.
Well, you could totally draw, like, a mouth opening to say words with, like, action lines flying out, right?
Only it's like a verbal
sound. You know, like, in comics you have the words that make, like, the noises? Like, pow, you could say, like, words next to it.
Just in case we didn't quite catch it. Catch that they were talking
and using their words.
It'll make talking more exciting. More dynamic.
But I do have to say, there was plenty of cheesecake in this. There were quite a few butt shots.
Yeah.
They were all dinos.
Huntress had a few.
Huntress had a couple.
Yeah, but her cape's mostly usually in the way.
Well, when she was dressed as Black Canary.
Oh, right, that's true.
Okay. And besides, Huntress has frontal cheesecake, and Black Canary has backside cheesecake.
That's true.
Put them together, and you get a whole cheesecake.
Yeah, the other thing that was kind of funny with the art was Diana's hair. She had, like, I want to say it, like, Edward Elric hair that, like, flopped over in front of her
at weird hard
angles. Yeah. She had really just, like, anime boy hair, which is so awkward.
But then she cut it and it looked good. Yeah. And it's true. It takes a lot of bravery to cut your own hair. I know it. It's, like, it's traumatizing. Even if you do it right and no one can tell you did it, it's like, oh god, what have I done?
Oh yeah, Dinah's hair looks a lot like... Dinah's hair looks a lot like Savant's hair.
Maybe she's Savant. Big reveal next year.
Savant looks even more like an anime character hair.
Creo does too. And we don't mean this negatively, it's just, it's that style.
Yeah, and you gotta talk about it, because it's in there.
Yeah.
Everyone loves a good laugh at anime.
Did we like the art? Did it work?
I liked it.
Yeah, I thought it was great.
Oh, there's some awkward cheesecake.
They, like, laying on the bed, handcuffed and
sexily posed, grunting. Laying on the bed, but grunting because she's actually captured and being traumatized. Like, see...
With her cornfish nets, they're corn now.
Oh, yeah. Like, I love cheesecake and comics. We were having such an intelligent conversation that we devolved to this. Like, it's part and parcel with the genre. You're gonna get cheesecake, right? Yeah, you're gonna get a really good butt shot of Huntress getting on her motorcycle. That's fine. That's part of what makes it a comic book. The same reason, if we were reading a Nightwing comic, we're gonna get a really good butt shot of Nightwing getting on his motorcycle, right? It's part and parcel with the genre, and that's okay. But you cross the line when you put cheesecake in a scene with a woman getting traumatized.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's all good. I'm fine with cheesecake and beefcake. But there's a line. You don't cross it. You're giggling at the
don't
word beefcake.
Don't say beefcake.
Beefcake.
Don't say beefcake.
You know why I giggle when I say beefcake? Because I think of Cartman from South Park. Beefcake! Which is horrible.
Before we finish, how'd you guys like the parking lot attendant?
That was
he was smooth.
Awesome. It was awesome.
I like that. He was smooth in the horrible, like, stupid semi.
He was. Although, okay, I gotta say that there is a trope where if you just keep harassing a woman to go on a date with you, she will. It may have worked on Huntress. Don't fucking do that in real life.
Right, because the operative word there is harassing.
Yeah.
Persistence pays off. Harassment doesn't.
If I annoy you enough, won't you love me?
Well, what was cool about the parking lot attendant is that he was not scared of her at all.
No.
Yeah.
Not intimidated one little bit.
There's even a part where she's like loading a crossbow and then she kind of points it at him. And then on the next panel, it's like, I took the date. Great.
She probably respects
that guy deserves
that,
some
though.
Props. I'm going to give him props through this thing.
Yeah, go ahead and give him a fist bump on my tablet. But you know what? And that's good writing, too, not just because it's a fun scene, but then it gets brought up later, right? Because later on she says something like, oh, I have a date with a parking attendant. And was it Diana says, reaching for the bottom of the barrel or something along those lines?
Or like, I thought I was bad off, something
Yeah, exactly.
Like that.
But the other thing that's great there is, I really want to read that issue. You could give me 28 pages of that date, and I would eat it up. I would love to read
that. Those make really good comics, actually. And here I'm going to go on another tangent, but there's an issue of... I think it's New Avengers, where it's just a date between Luke Cage and Jessica Jones.
That shit's entertaining.
Yeah, and it was a really good issue.
There's an issue of Ms. Marvel where she dates Peter Parker. Not because, like, they're seriously considering it, just because they need a night out together.
Oh, yeah,
to
that's
hang
a
out.
Good issue. I remember
it's
that
a
from,
hell of good
from,
issue.
From Ms. the Ms. Marvel run. It's, like
it's
a
good issue.
Years ago. Yeah.
Like, I would love to read this issue.
I want to see her, like, actually have a long-term relationship with parking attendant. Make that canon right there.
Oh my god, that'd
be awesome.
Wonderful. And I'm wondering if she'll show up for the date as Huntress or Helena Bertolini.
Well, is her identity secret?
I think it is. I don't know. He says you can leave the mask on if that's your thing.
He says it's so creepy.
He is creepy.
He looks
creepy
a little skeevy,
little
you know?
Yeah. He looks a lot skeevy.
But it's all,
which
he's
is great
also
art.
Cool.
Since this is officially our quote-unquote art section of the podcast, it's good art to make him look skeevy.
Oh, I did have another comment about the art.
All right.
A real
Yeah.
Other than cheesecake and skeevy parking attendant.
The artist did a really good job when he was drawing Huntress as Black Canary. Because I see her, you know, right up, and I figure, oh, it's several months later, and I'm like, there's something off about her face. Did the artist change? What's happening? Her face is off, and it was bothering me, and then I'm like, oh, it was Huntress! No, her face is right! And I thought that was really
good.
Yeah,
cause... I kind of got the same notion. Yeah, something was just a little bit different, but I couldn't pick it up either, and then I was like, oh, okay, that makes sense now.
Because so often you get women whose faces all kind of look generically the same, but every single person in the comic had, like, their own face, and that was really cool. Because that takes a lot of time and effort and thought, so...
And it's not something you expect to find either in a cheesecake kind of comic.
Art. Yeah.
But yeah, to correct you, there are... You were saying most of the time the cape gets in the way, but there are plenty of good shots of Helena on the bike where the cape is pushed off to the side so that you can see the cheesecake.
And there's a little kid pointing at her.
Yeah, there's a little kid like, oh, look at that butt. Just kind of creepy.
So, the thing that gets me is they even do it to Barbara Gordon, who is dressed fairly demurely, except you can, anytime she's in profile, see her nipples through her bra. So either they need to turn up the heat in the clock tower, or, you know, she should just put on a bra, because, you
know... I was going to say, do we know she's wearing a bra? Because she's just, I mean, through, like, almost all these comics, she's more or less chilling at home.
Yeah, it's just, if you're going to be featured in a comic, you should put on a bra, because that's just sloppy.
Okay, I think yeah. I think we're ready to wrap this up.
Yeah, now we're talking about Barbara Gordon's nipples.
What? Well, we can talk about Black Canary and Helena's nipples, but we can't talk about Barbara's.
No, we can. Is it because she's like in a wheelchair?
Is that what you were trying
to do? Yes, because she's in a wheelchair that you can't look at her nipples. By the way, that was sarcasm, people.
Nipple talk is like a new low.
Yes, okay. Let's Jen, you're first.
Okay. Oh god, that's so many feels.
From nipple talk to rating, go.
This is difficult. 3.5. Four. It's a four. Damn it. 4. I really like this, and the reason I changed to a 4 is I was about to say, I will read more of this. I bought this with my monies that are somewhat hard-earned, and I will put more of them monies towards this because I feel like it's worth it. And I think, I don't know, in the comics industry, speaking with your dollar is pretty powerful.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, like, usually if I like something, I'll borrow it, but if I'm willing to spend my own cash on it, I think that deserves a pretty good rating. I really like the character dynamic. I'm curious about what has happened to them in the past, what's going to happen to them. I really want to see where these characters end up going. I want to know more about, like, Barbara and Nightwing, and more about how she recruited Dinah, you know, how Huntress is going to pan out. I find it exciting, and that's a bit more than I can say for a lot of the comics we read, because I'll read it and be like, oh, that was pretty good. And then I'll never pick up another issue because I'm reading a whole bunch of other stuff. So, yeah, I really enjoyed this. And I think if maybe not starting from the beginning, I'll check out all of Gail Simone's run on it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, 4.
And actually, I recommend it from the beginning, too. There's lots of awesome continuity through and through. All right, David, you're next. I won't save you for last, since every time I make you last, you play.
Well, because I'm like, don't have anything.
Well, now.
Okay, I'm going to also...
You can tread on me instead of me treading on you.
All right, I'm going to be, like, really individual and original here, and I'm also going to give it a 4, because this is a damn good comic. It's cool because it's, you know, it's a superhero comic, and it's got the Bat Family in it, which is, you know, they have a million comics out. They're in everything. But it's completely different. It's a completely different take, or not take, but, like...
Feel?
Point of view from the characters, you know what I mean? Like, we don't get enough of the...
What's Batman
of the downtime.
Like, what's Batman like when he goes home after threatening somebody with, like, scary contacts in his eyes?
Yeah.
He eats a burrito.
Like, yeah, that's true.
No, he did that on the job.
Yeah.
It's another.
So. Yes. So, yeah, 4.
Okay.
I didn't have much to say, but.
I know, I'm so glad I didn't. Never mind. Okay, I want to give this one a 3.5.
You can.
But since Gail listened last week and tweeted at us, and which is fucking awesome, and since I've met her at Comic-Con before, she's so incredibly super nice because she's awesome, I'm going to give it a 4.
Don't bow to the man.
Legit. The woman? Or the man? Either way, I'm gonna give it a 4, too, for all the reasons you guys said. It's really good writing, and yeah, the art's really, really creepily cheesecake in some places.
Hey, but you know what? It's not. It wasn't a distraction, you know?
No.
Sometimes it can be, and... The words were so good.
The words, those words. The words.
The art was a nod to bad cheesecake.
I think it was fine.
It wasn't offensive. It was humorous.
Yeah, no, it's fine. And like we said, the art's not super exciting, which actually plays into the tone of this comic. Not that this comic isn't exciting, but it's more suspenseful for the situation.
Yeah.
So anyway, David, what are we reading next?
So now that we've wrapped up our Gail Simone arc, we're going to do something... a little bit kind of heavy, you know. We're going to read about what it means to be immortal and what it means to be a mercenary in a world full of heroes and villains where you kind of walk the line in the middle. And so to study these heavy concepts in depth, we're going to read some Deadpool. We're going to start with Daniel Way's, he began his run with Deadpool... number one, at the beginning of Secret Invasion, which was not that old, and then we're going to, the week after that, we're going to do Deadpool Dark Reign, but not the parts where he fights the Thunderbolts, because we're going to skip that part, because that crosses over between the two comics, so we're actually going to read issues 6 and 7, and then 9, 10,
no.
or 10, 10 11, 12, 10, 11, 12, and then after that, we're going to read Wade Wilson's War.
Bye.
By...
I'm going to make you try and pronounce it.
It's not in your notes.
It's not my notes?
Nope.
So oh, God.
It's by...
Note fail. It's by Dwayne...
Oh, right? Wrzinski?
It's Wrzinski?
Well, we will know next week, and it will be correct on our website, which is, go Andy,
www.atomicpoweredsupercast.com.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or you could contact us on Twitter,
which is at APSupercast, or www.twitter.com/APSupercast.
And if those two things fail, you can send us an email directly at atomicpoweredsupercast@gmail.com. And of course, subscribe to us on iTunes.
Yeah.
And then leave us a comment, because we don't have any.
Or friend us on Facebook.
You know what? So apparently, like, you have to have a minimum threshold for a number of comments before iTunes will show anything.
Oh, what the fuck, iTunes?
Because I've had people tell me that they left comments on iTunes and they left, like, star ratings and everything, but nothing shows up. So that just means that we don't have enough yet. So people, get on this.
Exactly. So, thanks for listening. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
'Phone browser history includes things like, how much light does a fern need?
Okay.
Using your fireplace for storage.
a good idea?
Chemoterapia, which I guess is the practice of removing blood from your veins and putting it, like, injecting it directly into your muscles. Not quite sure why you do that.
Okay.
Nightwing, raped 3 times. And that one...
Okay, wait, how does that work?
I learned yesterday. I looked up, because we were reading Birds of Prey, what was going on between Nightwing and Oracle.
Okay.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
And then it was something like, you know, I looked at the Wikipedia article of Dick Grayson's love interest, previous relationships, and it's like, oh, Tarantula raped him, by the way. And then I'm like, what? Wikipedia doesn't give me any more info on that, so I Google farther. Turns out, in official DC Comics, like, this is not bad slash fiction or anything, Dick Grayson has been raped and or sexually assaulted 3 times.
Jesus Christ. I might have to refresh some of my notes talking about how the open discussion of inter-character relationships was refreshing.
Andy, can I look and see your talent?
Because if it's, like, just all rape, I don't know how much I enjoy that.
Well, Barbara Gordon never raped Nightwing.
Well.
It was very,
I mean, it wouldn't be for lack of trying.
2 various people disguised as Corey.
Wait, who's Corey?
Starfire.
Oh.
When he was on Teen Titans. Oh,
and
so it's,
together.
Like, child molestation as well, if you really think about
but
it.
That's what Teen Titans is all about.
Really?
You know the character Deathstroke the Terminator? Did you ever watch the cartoon?
Like, I've seen random episodes of
it. So the main bad guy in the cartoon is this character named Slade.
Mm-hmm.
And in the comics, he's Deathstroke the Terminator, and he's, like, this bad guy. Deadpool is a parody of Deathstroke.
Oh, okay.
Like, Deathstroke's name is Slade Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
So it's Deathstroke, a.k.a. Slade Wilson, and Deadpool, Wade Wilson.
Okay.
Yeah, they made fun of... Deadpool is a character purely to make fun of his... It was to make fun of him. But there's a character named Tara in Teen Titans, and she, like, infiltrated the team. She's, like, an agent of Slade, and she's a teenager, just like all of them, and she is, like, Earth... She's, like, an Earthbender, basically.
Okay.
And so she like, gets in with Beast Boy and pretends to be, like, kind of... attracted to him, but it turns out that she's actually... So she's, like, 16, and she's sleeping with Slade, who's, like, an old man.
Ew.
Yeah.
Like, that's, white hair and everything.
Wait, did we see her in the Power Girl comics?
No, that's
no,
a different
Tara.
Okay.
That is a character named Tara, but it's a different Tara.